This episode is brought to you by Crooked Path Forge. Founded by blacksmith, author, and teacher Jordan Borstelman, Crooked Path Forge is one of the many gems that makes Gainesville a treasure. Not only does Jordan and his team forge pristine blades, kitchen knives, axes, various metalworks, and custom builds, but Crooked Path Forge also offers incredible workshops and classes for people like you and me who might want to take a swing at this ancient art form. These classes are the perfect gifts for your friends, family members, or just to yourself. You don't have to wait for a special holiday either, although the holiday season is upon us, so keep that in mind. But these classes are worth experiencing just to expand your horizons. I've attended two of them. Before I even conceived of this podcast, both were incredibly fun challenges, a learning experience I'll never forget, and the perfect way to spend a day with a good friend, or to spend a day making a new friend. I can't give a higher recommendation for his classes. It is an experience that will last you a lifetime. And as I mentioned, the kitchen knives, the blades, the axes, the various custom builds that come out of Crooked Path Forge are stunning, not only in their beauty, but also in their quality. Do yourselves a favor, check out crookedpathforge.org, where you'll find these remarkable works of art and the schedule for the various workshops offered there. And when you make your purchases, use the promo code FINDAHAMMER and get a special 10% discount brought to you by none other than Find A Way and Crooked Path Forge together. Thanks for being here. Enjoy. This is a travelogue, a chronicle of life's journeys and the bits of wisdom gathered along the path. This is a sketch, a perpetually unfinished portrait of a community of explorers. This is a guide to curiosity and wonder, setting off from Gainesville, Florida. This is Find A Way. Welcome to part two of my conversation with Darby Delane. Join our discussion about academic gatekeeping, striving to be a student forever. And you can hear a story about me getting my ass kicked in basketball. Darby teases us with a dirty secret about the crucifix. We talk about poop and sex at the dinner table. And slowly but surely, we get ourselves out of our grumpy moods. Plus, we even talk about aliens a little bit, so you better stick around. Thanks for finding your way here today. Enjoy.
Who gets to decide what art, what the experience of art should even be? And academia, which I love and come from, has, you know, for a long time held the, you know, held court over all of our experiences. Like, it is the experience to have in regards to art or anything.
Sure.
And that's what you're bumping up against. It's one perspective. And I find it very valuable. You know, when we're in a time of anti-intellectualism, I get nervous because I love academics as one perspective. I don't want to throw it away.
No.
But it isn't the only perspective, nor is it the better perspective. It is just a lens.
And that's where I have my problem, is when I think people certain people feel attacked by my perspective when it comes to, you know, this sort of thing. And I'm not trying to say that their perspective doesn't matter. What I'm saying is that it's not better.
Absolutely.
It's just a different perspective.
That's it.
And I think the only time where I kind of get pissed off is when somebody's saying it's better. Somebody's saying, like, well, this is how you should think. Or you should, you know, like, I had a great conversation with Mike O'Malley about this in our third episode. And he told a story about a friend of his who is a bartender in this really nice restaurant. And this guy came in and ordered a hamburger at this place. And it's supposed to be like one of the best burgers in Chicago. And the guy ordered it like, well done. And the bartender was like, have you ever tried it, you know, medium or medium rare? And the guy was like, absolutely not. This is the way I've always eaten it. And long story short, the bartender said, like, listen, I'll buy your burger. I think you should try medium rare. And if you don't like it, we'll bring another one out and you'll get it exactly the way you want, but I just want you to see what it tastes like. And so the guy agreed to it, brought it out, took a bite and was like, oh my God, this is amazing. This is so good.
Wow.
And
that bartender is like a real teacher.
Right. And that's how I took it. Like the bartender didn't say, what the hell's the matter with you? The right way to order a burger is medium rare. All he wanted to do was give an experience, you know, and so I imagine myself
in safety so that the guy could take a risk.
Exactly. Yeah. Make a safe place for it, you know. And I imagined myself like in a gallery looking at, you know, some sophisticated art that maybe I don't have any like full understanding. I haven't studied art my whole life. And if I'm looking at a piece and somebody says, this is one of the most beautiful things in the world, if I don't see the beauty in it, I'm not going to say like, what are you talking about? This is bullshit. This is a piece of shit. You know, who cares about this? I piss on this, you know, that's not what I'm saying.
Your general direction.
I want to say like, yeah, tell me why. I don't see it yet. Tell me why. Right.
What is beautiful to you?
Right.
What is beauty? First of all, you have to ask him what his definition is. And then show me what you see.
Right.
And if I don't see it.
And if this expert on painting says like, oh, well, you can tell by the strokes that they used, you know, they had to do one stroke a day for 5 years straight or else it would, you know, blah, blah, blah. If they know something that I don't know, I do want to know it. What I don't want is for me to look at the TJ Maxx art and say like, this is beautiful and have somebody say, no, it's not. And that's what bothers me. That's what really irks me. And yes. If I say this is beautiful and someone says, I don't see it, what is beautiful about it? That's okay. And then even if I'm done, you know, explaining, well, I think it's beautiful because, and they say, oh, okay, well, I still don't see the beauty in that, but okay. You know, that's an okay conversation for
me. It's a great conversation.
I'm so tired of people saying that it's not, or it's unsophisticated, or it's, you know,
you're a millennial, right? Like on the cusp between my generation X and millennial. Is that where you are?
There's a middle. Audrey makes fun of me for pointing this out, but there's like a 4 year chunk of time that is like between millennial and your generation X.
Yeah.
And I can't remember what it's called now, but I'm 83 and like I think 84 is the cutoff point or something.
Okay.
So like I'm right in there, but
yeah,
I'm basically a millennial.
Because you're that emotional feeling, that anger you have when talking about that scenario where you're standing next to the art expert who during my generation had the authority to tell me I was wrong.
Right.
Your generation, I remember when I taught at UF that the millennials were my students and they were like challenging, you know, academic knowledge and truth, you know, not truth, academic truth naming.
Sure.
You know, and I was like, who are these people? Like, how could you do that? I was so, you know, sold as a Gen Xer, you know, who came right after, like, I'm right there. I'm 1966, so like 2 years after the boomers.
Right.
And that feeling you have is what they were feeling and trying to explain to me.
Sure.
They were like, listen, you old people, we've had enough of your institutions of higher education defining knowledge for us, and we want to have a voice at the table and deconstruct what it means, what beauty means or truth or whatever. And they were really having this angst about it, which from then after talking to you and knowing how that, I know that about you, that we've talked about that before. That you're at the crossroads of these generational perspectives and your body is experiencing it.
Sure.
It's like a real angst in your body. It's anger. It's fear. It's confusion. Like, am I allowed to question
for me, it's this weird moment of like, it's almost comparable to gaslighting where,
yes,
where I want to say to the person, like, you are so sure of yourself and you're so wrong. You know, and like,
yeah,
and I can sit here and describe this very logical reason why it doesn't add up, and the barrier between us for them is so strong that they just won't hear it. They'll just kind of, and that's again, that's ego. That's like,
right.
if they allow this thought to take hold, it's the death of their expertise.
That's exactly right. Which is a threat to their entire existence. That's why higher education is in question now, because it has had a monopoly over the definition of truth and knowledge, and it's being disrupted now. And people's careers depend on it. I mean, I always go back to, can I feed my kid? You know,
right.
And I mean, it's at that gut level of threat. And so that wall that you feel in that scenario with that quote unquote art expert, that you're feeling him, that imaginary guy just putting a wall and just pushing it away, is would be the case.
Sure.
But as those guys die out and you guys take the leadership position in the culture, our culture, which is exactly what's happening, you guys get to weigh in on the definition of knowledge and truth in a way that you couldn't when you were younger.
Right. Yeah. Well, I think it's like it's a changing tide, you know. I think, in all cases, not just with art or anything, I think people who are able to have an open mind, especially when it comes to the thing that they identify with the most, which to me makes the most logical sense. If you really care about a thing, you should keep an open mind about it, because then there's more to learn about it.
Is this the part where we get to talk about UFOs? You know we want to.
I did not see that one coming, but yes,
dude,
of course.
You know we want. You got me on down this rabbit hole.
Well,
we will. We're going to UFO. We're going to freaking go woo crazy. And talk
I'll do it whenever you want.
UAPs.
But
go back to what you were saying.
Well, no, I think that going back to the original direction that we started with today is
with my misery.
With any topic that you care about, whether it's your own health or if it's a passion that you have, music or art, or if it's technology or whatever, politics. That you have ceased to be a student once you close your mind off to new information. So what are you after that? You're not a teacher either. You can't be a teacher.
Just die, because I'm telling you, what's the point of being here? I mean, the whole thing is like, I think learning is like a basic human right. And if you're not just like continuing to do that, then you're wasting your time.
And mine. Yeah,
exactly.
And I think I said that pretty quickly. I mean, I can still learn from closed-minded people, but I think that's almost a pushback against, it's not a pushback against what you feel, because what you feel is there. But when you started us off today talking about the discomfort you have with the death of this person
ego.
That you
yeah.
are,
mm-hmm.
that you thought you were,
yeah,
because it wasn't you, but
yeah.
it was this like person you put out there. Excuse me. I think when I hear you say that, what I hear is that you're coming alive.
Agreed.
I think you are, you're allowing part of yourself to die, right?
Right.
And that goes back to the same, like, if you consider yourself an art expert to the point that you're no longer taking anybody else's perspective on art because you figured it out, now you're dead.
Yeah.
Now you're gone.
Yeah.
Right? You're alive again when you open up and allow those parts of yourself to not become so rigid, you
right.
know, it's like that. It's like the definition of like
life,
the universe will end when it stops moving, you
right.
know, when it's stagnant.
Yeah, life is movement.
Right.
Yeah.
And change.
Change.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the most common denominator.
And you're, That's not to say that it's not uncomfortable.
It's terrifying because I believed in the masked Darby. I was being rewarded for being the masked Darby.
Yeah.
And I was, there was so much of my authentic self in that masked role player when it comes to my academic work. Right. I mean, that was real.
Yeah,
that part
of course.
Was totally who I was, but I was filtering it through this avatar that was, that I needed to make, to create so that I was intelligible to a community that could reward me and pay me and, you know,
yeah,
give me a job. But I really believed in that avatar. So letting that avatar go really is an act of faith, because I literally thought, you know, who am I if I'm not that? And so that had to die. And you really do face, like, if I'm not that, what if nothing else emerges from that empty space? You know, that might be the end.
I don't know. I think if nothing emerges, it just means that there's room for stuff to come in.
Well, things emerge. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Totally. That's what's happening. But I just didn't have that kind of, I didn't have spiritual faith. I didn't have any of that to, yeah, you know, buoy me. And, but it all came in that process. And yeah, but it, you know, at some point it's not, at some point when you know this isn't work, when you're trying to find a way and the way you've been doing it is not working, it's almost worth it. It's like, well, I don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah.
So if I'm a nothing after that, if I let that avatar go and nothing emerges in its place, well, that's truth. And for me, truth is the most important. I mean, it is my highest value is truth, capital T or not.
Yeah.
And it was worth it to me to know the truth, even if I was left empty-handed at the end of the day.
Yeah. I feel the same way. I want to be strong enough to sacrifice everything for truth. I want to be.
I think that's why you and I are so connected, because we value that above, like, if it really, when you really boil it down, I have a lot of values, but that's the one that seems to be the common thread across my lifespan.
Yeah.
The one that I'm all, that North Star.
Yeah.
Is always the pursuit of truth. And I don't mean that in an objective way.
Right.
You know,
no,
whatever,
it's personal that, truth.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's another mistake I think is really easy to make, is to think that our truth is the truth. You,
yeah,
know, and it's just, it's ours. And that's a metric that I'm comfortable living with, you know, and it makes it so that I feel vulnerable a lot, because that means that I have to be ready to let that truth die and accept a different one. You know,
yeah.
I think
that vulnerability piece with the process of awakening is really hard.
It's really hard, but I do, like, I think of some of those moments where, those awful moments where I had to admit I was wrong. Those are some of the most beautiful moments of my life. And maybe I didn't realize it at the time. I was just telling, just talking to Audrey about this experience I had when I was like 12 years old, when I was in this mentality that, like, the classic 12-year-old boy mentality that, like, boys are better at sports than girls.
Yeah.
Just like as a flat
truth.
Well,
if you didn't think that at age 12, you weren't paying attention.
Right. Yeah. That's what I was being told.
Exactly.
Right. And I remember there was this girl in my neighborhood, Sarah, who was like star basketball player on her team. And she was like a year or two older than me. And to me, it didn't matter that she was a star on her team, because it was the girls' basketball
team. The ginger.
Team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lesser.
And So what, you know, I must have voiced this at some point. I can't remember what.
I'm sure you did, truth teller.
I'm sure I said something like that. And she was like, well, I'll play it right now. I'll prove you wrong. And I don't think I had any fear whatsoever about it. I was like, of course, come on, let's go. I'm a boy. Have you noticed I'm a boy?
That's
and
great.
I wasn't even that good at basketball. I just
knew your gender was going to save the day.
Right. She kicked my ass like two games in a row. Like I don't even think I scored once. And it was clear from the very beginning, as soon as we started the game, I was like, oh shit, I'm gonna get my ass kicked.
Yeah.
And it was embarrassing, obviously. It was jarring.
Was there an audience? I hope not.
We had like a neighborhood crew. My best friend next door, Jessica, was friends with Sarah. And so she was watching. And I don't know who else. There might have been some other people there, but I know that Jessica was there. And I'll say that by the end of it, I didn't say something like, well, you know, you only won because my leg was sore, or, you know, like I hurt my finger a couple weeks ago is probably why I couldn't, you know, I wasn't making excuses. And I don't even think that I was like super grumpy about it. I think I just remember being shocked.
Your whole system was just like, how do I process this?
And that was the best lesson in gender studies I've ever had.
Love it.
You know, and I've had many good ones. Yeah. You know, I've been an idiot my whole life.
Yeah.
but
you mean it wasn't just recently?
That is like a rare Darby burn. I love it.
Yeah, I have a lot of them.
I'm
so dark. They aren't coming up.
That's the thing that Audrey recognizes in me too, and maybe it's something we share. It's like she recognizes that my sense of humor very often is to say the worst possible thing.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Like when I was at your house, and I won't say it, but I told you my response to the crucifixion. When it flew out of my mouth, I was like, that was like weeks of fear and regret. Like, okay, that's a deal breaker. Audrey will never let me come over again. Gotta, you know, there's another relationship I ruined.
No way. There's no better way to endear me to you. My sister would have really appreciated that one too.
I know there are people in the world who would, but I haven't learned to meet them until now. Like you're very unusual, Colin.
Thank you.
In a good way.
Here's the thing though, you not saying what your reaction is, I think people are gonna imagine way worse than what it really was.
I can't say it on it's a unique perspective.
Certainly is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'm alone.
You're not. It's very popular.
Think about throughout history. I mean, just, you know, I think it's something that's a thing, but I just never heard anybody say it except myself. Anyway.
What torture we're putting the listener through.
What'd you say?
What torture we're putting the listener through.
Sorry, guys. You can't know. It is off limits.
It's not bad, though.
No. You can say it on another podcast. You can, like, tell your next friend what Darby thinks about the crucifix. But I can't be there.
You can't. No. But it'll be out there the same way.
I know, but it's different.
I'm gonna say it in my outro on this episode.
Remember, my mom listens to this. Does that scare you at all? Like, does it make you go, okay, I'll censor myself? No.
Well,
yeah, I've wondered about that, by the way.
Yeah.
How much censorship have you felt in that, you know, that your parents listen to this? Is it a factor sometimes? I was just curious.
Maybe a little bit more than I thought it would be off the bat, but really, no.
God.
What I'll say is it's not censorship that's happened. It's self-reflection. Like what I didn't expect was My friend Lexi said it best in our interview. She was saying that, you know, the idea of sitting down with me and talking about vulnerable things is easy because we have created a safe space for each other in our friendship. Same as you and me.
Yeah.
What's weird is to do that and then broadcast it to a whole bunch of people who we don't.
Right.
We haven't developed that sort of relationship with.
You nailed it.
And what I, the challenge that I'm putting out there for myself is, and the bet that I'm making is that our authentic selves, our vulnerable selves are worth standing up to anybody's judgment. You know, even if we don't feel like, I think the fact that you and I feel safe to say so many things to each other in this room, just the two of us, is providing me with a really good opportunity to test how much do I really believe in myself here? Like, instead of masking to people, you know, how can I just present as much as myself as I can? And then, like, can I face the consequences for it? You know, I've had, I've had some people, mostly wonderful feedback. Most people have, who have reached out, have just been lovely and complimentary and have said some things that aren't even complimentary. They're more like, you know, personal experience with listening that has really touched me and meant a lot to me.
God.
And that's been wonderful. I have had a couple people respond with like, whoa, I didn't realize that, you know, you're gonna, and it's been fine. I have found myself hearing that and being completely okay.
And not even having like a night terror that evening?
Absolutely not. Nothing.
It, oh like, my God, Colin, that is awesome.
Yeah. Even like one of the things that I stressed about the most was your our episode that we the just woo? Put out, the woo, woo episode. One? Yeah.
Yeah.
More
to come.
Yeah, there will be. I've had a lot of response from that one, by the way. But I was so afraid of just sharing the fact that I had an out-of-body experience. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, I think the thing that stuck out the most to me when I was listening back to it was the one detail about me asking the robot to turn into a naked woman. I was like, oh my God.
Was the part that...
Well, because, I mean, I think in our culture, that's where shame shows up the most, is when you share your sexuality or share your, you know, whatever.
Okay, that makes sense now.
And I thought like, oh God, if my parents listen to this one or my family listens to this one or things like that. And then I thought like, you know, my parents don't expect me to be like a non-sexual being. Like my friends and family.
That would not be good.
And that's, I think, again, that's another thing that you and I share. And I think maybe it's generational in some ways as well. But there seems to be a thing with older generations where it's like, sure, it's fine. Like with sexuality, sure, it's fine to want to have sex and things like that, but it's not okay to talk about it. Mm-hmm. It's not appropriate.
Right.
You know, we don't bring that up at the dinner table. Mm-hmm. Fuck that.
Yeah. Right.
I am so uninterested in living that way. Now, I say fuck it. It doesn't mean that they have to start talking about it.
Right.
If it makes them uncomfortable or anything like that. But I am not interested in, if somebody is uncomfortable hearing the reality that humans like to have sex.
That humans are sexual beings.
Right. Not all of, I mean, there are asexual humans for sure, and that's fine. But most of us, anybody who wants to have sex or doesn't want to have sex, there's nothing to be ashamed of that. It is natural. It's a thing that exists. So anybody who wants to have a space where it's like, I don't want to hear that. I want to be able to put my fingers in my ears and pretend like it's not there. Mm-hmm. Like, don't invite me to that party.
Right.
You know, and if I can't sit at the dinner table, and it's not like if I sat at the dinner table and it's quiet and I'm like, hey, who here likes blowjobs? You know, like, like that's very different. You know, that's like, you know, I get that that's maybe not appropriate for Thanksgiving dinner, you know, with people. But like, if we're having conversation and we naturally get to a point where like, it's time for us to acknowledge that somebody loves sex or something like that, mm-hmm. man, if if I'm expected to just be like, I'm not going to say it.
No, ma'am. That's their suffering and they can have it.
Right. That's their deal. And I guess,
you know, I'm sorry. I'm a caring person. I do care if you're suffering, but that's your work to do.
Sure. My sister Alicia and I have
we going to talk about poop at the dinner table?
Poop.
Yeah, yeah, that's my favorite topic when my family gets together for dinner.
Again.
And I know when I found out you and your sister have done that before.
Oh, that's our thing. That's like thing. Our joke. Well, and because my mom and dad hate it.
That's why I did it, because it would make my parents mad, especially my mom.
Yeah.
So. And she knew it was going to come up every single Thanksgiving dinner. Sure. Poop is going to come out of Darby's mouth.
Not literally.
Whether she's 5 year old, 5 years old, or 50 years old, doesn't matter.
Yep.
So when I found out we had that in common, that you and your sister like that topic and like to discuss that topic and maybe at the dinner table, yeah, I knew we would be friends.
Right. Yeah.
You know, that was it. That was the moment.
Well, when we put out our first episode, one of the first responses I got was from Alicia, and she said, you know, she loved the episode, and then she said, and I definitely want to be friends with Darby. I got to know Darby.
We're kindred spirits.
Totally. I mean, it's poop alone. It brings us together. You. Yeah.
Poop.
Poop.
But sex, we'll have to add that to the Thanksgiving dinner meal.
Right. Yeah.
That's a good idea.
As I cut into this baked potato, I'm reminded of a woman's vagina.
Cut open, steam comes out. We need a video so that people can see our hand gestures while we're talking. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, butter.
Yeah.
We could go on.
Sour cream.
Oh, perfect. Yum.
Holy shit. I'm so sorry, Mom.
I'm sorry, Mom. Me too.
Yeah.
I am censoring myself, Mom. There's a comment I really want to make right now, but I've decided I won't.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's self-regulation right there.
Which I'm learning for the first time.
Do you feel like
I feel better.
Good. Yeah, me too. I'm not grumpy anymore.
Yeah, I was grumpy as hell when I came in here.
I think to add to our observation notes, mm-hmm. I've already got like, this is what it's like to be grumpy. Mm-hmm. And then I can add like one solution to grumpiness, or one transition that I can create from grumpiness is sitting down with Darby and having a good long talk.
Me too.
Yeah.
Agreed. And I still feel protective of you, like when I feel dysregulated and I have, you know, really strong, if I get triggered or strong emotions pop up, I'm so scared, like it's gonna ruin our friendship, you know, and I want you to know whenever that happens, because it did happen one time today, had nothing to do with you. Absolutely, it had to do with a thought that I had been thinking about, that what you were talking about reminded me of.
Was it the politics thing?
Yeah, when I said, oh, I'm triggered. Yeah. What did I say? Oh, I'm pissed.
Oh, is it the government's job to make you happy?
That one.
Yeah.
And I had it had nothing to do with you or what you were saying. It reminded me of something that triggered me recently.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's so hard to explain all that.
Yeah.
But this big fireball just boom, comes out.
Sure.
And you are just I don't know how you do it.
If it helps, and I don't think this is news to you or anything, but if it helps, the only thing I could see destroying a friendship like ours.
Yeah, what would it be?
Would be like if you purposely tried to screw me over, you know, if you like somehow, you know, like plotted against me, or if you like gaslit me, or
I know people like that. I know people like that.
Sure. Yeah. But that's not you.
No, I don't even. It's so funny. It's like I was talking to Tanya the other day about narcissism. And I have a lot of narcissistic traits, which is a whole great discussion. You know, you and I have kind of touched on it, you know, looking at autism and, you know, the survival skills narcissism can offer an autistic person, which I have used in my life. But I realized I wasn't a narcissist when I realized I just, there's not a bone in my body that can seek revenge. I mean, my mind just doesn't even compute that. Like, it doesn't even come up as an option when right. I've been wronged to seek revenge or to hurt someone on purpose.
Right.
And it's like, and now in my life, even if I did have that, I don't have the energy. That's like a whole project to actually like focus on someone, want to hurt them.
Yeah.
You have to, that takes a lot of energy.
Yeah. And planning and,
oh my
yeah.
God.
Oh yeah.
Anyway. So yeah.
Well, but also like with narcissism, the other thing that is like an instant non-starter for you is the fact that you're constantly self-reflecting and,
right.
you know, wondering like, yeah. So
she's,
I mean,
like, girl, you ain't narcissistic. You can't reflect and you can't be metacognitive about your own interior world if you're a narcissist.
You like
okay.
I think even just using that term, like saying like narcissistic qualities, like I don't think they can be qualities of narcissism. I think that there is, like, for me at least, when I look at you and I understand what you're trying to say, but all I see is somebody who's trying to like protect themselves. And that's it.
But that's all. But that's what a narcissist is doing.
I understand, but yeah. It's like, that's like I feel like it's like saying that like somebody who enjoys sex has like rapist qualities.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
It's like the it's there is an act of sex happening, but one is this like aggressive
about power.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's what narcissism is.
Right, right.
You're exerting power over others.
Right.
You're just trying to like you said in the very beginning of this, you've lived 58 years, as you know, neurodiverse, ADHD, autistic. Those all go into neurodiverse, but. You have been exposed all this time and harmed and hurt and like manipulated and pushed and pulled and all this stuff. And you've discovered that like the best way to protect yourself is to consider like, can I do this? Is this hurting me? Is this, you know, like, and I think it's easy for our society to make people who do that think like, oh, you're only thinking about yourself or you're, you know, self-centered yeah. some way or anything. It's okay to be self-centered. Mm-hmm. You can still care about other people when you come from your own center. That's actually the goal here.
Yeah, right.
You know,
right.
It's just boundaries. So
I always have this.
I always have this like pushback when I hear you bring up narcissistic qualities.
I swear, Colin, we'll do another podcast where I will. Okay, maybe that's the wrong word. I have used narcissistic behaviors to survive, especially in my 20s. It got better, but in my early adulthood, I swear to God I was. And I'll tell you stories.
Sure.
But it's, you know, now that I think about it, I was just doing what I was taught.
Right.
I mean, I learned, I've been surrounded by narcissists for my whole life. I'm like, and I've heard that autistic people are like magnets for, especially if they're empathic, they're
right.
really magnets for that kind of
yeah.
exploitative relationship. So, you know, and there are behaviors narcissists use that have been helpful for me. But now it kind of extinguished over time when I learned other skills and, you know, yeah. it was really in my 20s, but it I'm telling you, I was awful. Awful.
I bet you.
I was horrible. I really was. We're going to talk about it sometime.
Okay, we'll talk before yeah. Before it's, I tell you that you're wrong.
Well, okay, the topic will be my relationship with men.
Okay,
how's that?
Sure,
because that's a story and a half.
Yeah, I want to hear it.
There, yeah.
Actually, yeah, because I've only heard bits and pieces yeah. of those. So
I was not a nice person to men in my early adulthood. I learned later I wasn't aware that I wasn't.
Right.
I was not like, ooh, let's get them all back. You know, let me scheme in my basement how I can, you know, punish all these men. Not at all. It wasn't like that.
No, I.
Not at all.
No.
And then I, because of self-reflection in my late 20s, I'm like, this isn't me. This doesn't align with my values. Yeah.
Which is why I can't be narcissistic.
Right.
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 At least I think.
Right.
Right. I mean, and you actually, you know a lot more about it than I do. So, I mean.
I don't.
You do. I mean, because you've done research, you've read up, you're such a, like, an avid researcher.
Things I get interested in, I go deep. It's true.
But just
now it's UFOs.
Which
it's your fault. I'm so mad at you.
Aw.
Yeah. I can't get enough. And it's not just the nuts and bolts UFO data from the government or anything like that. It's all the culture stuff and the history and, you know, experiencers and
it shit. Is fascinating.
You're killing me.
It is fascinating.
We're going to talk about that.
Yeah. I like that you jumped into it, you know, or I like that.
I'm very compelled.
Sure. It is compelling. Just, I mean, I think it's got a little something for everybody.
Yeah. There's a lot of woo we're going to do. We're going to do a lot of woo.
Well, I mean, and I'm totally into that, but I don't even think, like, there's a lot of discussion about this stuff, like UAPs, UFOs, whatever you want to call them. There's a lot of conversation on that topic that is zero woo. You know, that's just like, let's just talk about gaslighting. Let's just talk about, you know, like there's a lot of data that is not, that is like 0% faith based. That is just like, here's, or at least I shouldn't say 0%, very, as much faith based as it is to look at some scientific research that is vetted and everything like that.
The nuts and bolts stuff, the objective, you know, observation stuff.
There's
stuff, a lot of it.
This stuff is influencing our culture. This stuff is, you know,
like it or not, it's here. Whether it's real or not, it's here.
Right.
And to me, the most exciting thing is the intersection between that entire conversation and the notion of consciousness. That's my favorite sweet spot.
Right.
That's it. I don't really care about the physics and all that, but I do care about that role. You know, like my brother said in a text yesterday, he said, the truth is out there. And I said, yeah, but maybe the truth is in here.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Or maybe better later, I was like, oh, maybe it's both.
Right. I mean, I think that mentality, I think, would be one of the most powerful shifts in our culture ever. If people could just start saying, like, maybe it's both, you know, in any arena, you know, politics especially.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That would heal the world if we were able to hold two variables at the same time and see how they relate to each other.
Yeah, it might not heal it right off the bat, but it would at least, like, diagnose it. You know, it would at least, like, that's another conversation for sure, but another frustration that I get into. But I think, going back to what I was saying, like, as far as our friendship is concerned, and my friendship with anyone, really, that's it. Like, if you want good for me and I want good for you, I don't see the friendship going badly. You know, I don't see, if you can get angry at me, if, as a matter of fact, you getting angry at me is a sign that you care, you know, or anything like that. And also, if you can express your anger to me, it's a sign that you have faith in our friendship.
Yeah.
So, like, if you need to hide, if you're angry at me and you feel like you got to hide it from me for a certain amount of time, and then maybe like a year later, you're like, man, I was so fucking pissed at you the other, you know, last year. That's fine. You know, like, it's nothing like that. The only thing that I think, and this goes for all my friends out there.
Tell them, Colin.
For me, the only thing that would make me not friends with you, I'm not saying it might not, like, shift our friendship or something like that, but if somebody can't be happy for my success or feel some compassion for my failure.
I know who those people are. I've met them many times in my life.
Same here, you know, and that's
just that, get away from them. Just run for the hills, man.
My friendships that have suffered in life, on my, like, because of a decision that I've made, is been when I've realized, like, this person doesn't want me to succeed, or this person doesn't take pleasure in my success.
Oh, that's bullshit, man.
And that is a real, almost immediate sort of, like, kind of, I don't know, like, moment for me to
run.
Yeah, I mean, and also
run,
like,
away.
Get angry, you know, like,
well, yeah.
And it's,
yeah,
that moment of sort of like, oh my God, I didn't realize, yeah, it, but this person doesn't have my best interest in mind. And that's it. And that's hard for me to forgive. It's not impossible.
Yeah. Well, it's a real injury.
Yeah.
It's a real injury. It's not cool. It's, you know, it's one of the signs of narcissism.
It can be.
Actually, it is one of the many, many,
right, you know,
manifestations, when it's really about jealousy and competition, and you didn't know it because, you know, we're both vulnerable, and, you know, we believe in people, and they give, sure, us their little charming selves and act like our friends, and then you realize it really the whole time that they were threatened,
right?
And it's like, I'm so sorry, but you gotta go now because I don't have time for this anymore.
Well, and I don't think, if I want to take emotion out of it, there's no real logical reason to keep a person like that in your life. It seems,
I mean, that's just
cruel.
It's a deal breaker.
Yeah.
It's a deal breaker. No, I don't have time for it anymore.
Right. Well, and also, it's a lot of times what helps me when it comes to self-care, when it comes to, like, making decisions about self-care, it helps me to think about myself as, like, my kid. You know, and if I had a kid and this person was doing this thing to my kid,
you would know what to do.
I would say, hey, wait a minute. Don't let that person do that.
That's,
you know,
right.
Like, hey, you deserve a friend who wants success for you. Or if my kid was rooting against somebody that was their friend and saying they want them, why would you root against your friend? If you're rooting, mm-hmm, against them, that means that you're not friends with them. You're not being good to them. You know, that. It's a lot easier when it's not me that I'm talking to. And then slowly...
It clarifies what you need to do for yourself.
And slowly over time, when I start applying that within and start talking to that part of myself that is hurt or that is, you know, whatever, and saying, like, hey, you know, you deserve better than this, whatever it is, it becomes a lot easier to just think of that right away instead of creating that separation, instead of,
right,
you know, trying to... So...
How do you do it with someone that you have to interact with, like a family member, or like, how do you have that internal boundary of, you know, keeping yourself safe? But that's what I'm trying to learn. Like, how do you do that? You know, when that person is, you can't just, you know, run away.
I think that's where that positive version of being self-centered comes from.
Mm-hmm.
Is you have to love yourself more than anybody in the world. You,
yes,
know, you have to, like, you have to create your own foundation of love and kindness so that when that person who you're forced to interact with,
yeah,
challenges it,
which they will.
Right. And it's okay to get challenged,
which it is,
but it levels the playing field to have a strong foundation. You know,
okay,
like, if you're having a balancing contest, it's not fair for somebody to be able to shake the ground that you're balancing on, you,
right,
know, like, it's only fair for you to have solid ground, you know, and then you can really see how good your balance is, and then you can take the shaking, you know, then you can whatever. But I think,
yeah, that makes sense.
You just have to, I don't know about you. I think it's the same though, but
that resonates with me completely. 'Cause that's my wondering, my inquiry right now.
Well, and have it helps to have those of us who have been dependent on others for that foundation for a long time. I think it really helps to have a handful of really close friends who can, like, reinforce it. So that's what
that's
I get from you.
That's the business we're in, isn't it? You and
that's
I.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, you were my first step on the moon in this new world of building trust and safety and presence with another soul.
It's a really cool way of putting it. Thank you.
It's just been, I skipped that step for too long and I can't get away with it anymore.
Good. I'm glad.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Good for us.
Yeah, you deserve it.
This has been really good. I really needed this.
Yeah.
I really appreciate your presence and documenting it too. Scared to listen to our stuff. I listened to our first episode, loved it. It was like, I listened to it several times.
Yeah, I loved it too.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to the second one where we were together, the woo one, but I will.
You got to. That's really good.
Is it really? You loved it.
I loved it.
Okay. I'll do it. This is the secret to life, I think.
I do
for
too.
For us, anyway, at this moment in our lives, this is really important.
I agree. Being intentional, sitting down to have just like a good talk. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what we used to. That's the microphones and everything and recording is like icing on a cake that we already baked. You know, like you Agreed. And I, we started a practice a long time ago.
We did.
Of saying like, hey, let's get together on this day for this many that's hours. Right. And talk, you know, and we're not going to go watch a movie. We're not going to go whatever.
Which we need to do also.
Yeah, we can do those things too. But we knew that we needed to dump, you know, we needed to just like let stuff out and talk about it and try things out.
Yep.
And that's all
push
we're doing
each other's
here.
Thinking.
Yeah.
You know, it's just been a gift. You're a gift.
Right back at you.
I love you.
I love you too. Done. Thank you for finding your way here today. Darby will return. Darby will always return. She and I are sort of eternally connected to each other, and there will always be more conversations to be had. As a matter of fact, I just recorded another one with her yesterday, so you've got that to look forward to in about a month. In the meantime, our guest next week is Connor Mitchell. Connor is a guest I can almost guarantee you're going to love. We have wonderful conversation. He really helps expand my perspective, makes me question some of my ideas that I thought were unquestionable, and I learned so much from him. So join us. Until then, I leave you with my gratitude for being here, especially if you're sharing with your friends, you're telling your family to listen. It means the world to me. I also would like to thank our sponsor, Crooked Path Forge. Do yourself a favor and go to crookedpathforge.org. Use promo code FINDAHAMMER to get 10% off your purchase of a kitchen blade, a garden knife, a full-blown sword, a hatchet, an axe, metalworks of various types, all made by local blacksmith Jordan Borstelman. Or you can get 10% off a workshop or class where Jordan will teach you how to make your own blade or your own axe. Both are incredible products and services to purchase. Use promo code FINDAHAMMER to get 10% off. You won't regret it. If you or any business that you know would like to sponsor the podcast, you can contact me at findawaypodcast@proton.me, or you can find me on Instagram at findawaypodcast. Perhaps we can make something happen. You never know until you try, which is the reason why I'm putting out this message in the first place. Got to give it a go, right? I got to try. So there it is. Sponsors, you've been alerted. Reach out. Let me know what you think. While I'm putting things out into the universe, I think I'll put this out too. I'm currently looking for more work like this. I have fallen in love with this podcast and all the work that goes along with it. I love interviewing people. I love the creative process. I love collaboration. I love talking. I love doing voiceover work. I would love to make an audiobook or to narrate a documentary, host a show, anything like that. So if you or anyone you know is looking for someone to do some work like that, I hope you think of me and I hope you reach out. I hope you're doing the kind of job that you love doing. It is a dream of mine to be able to support myself with something that fulfills me as much as this podcast does. So here's hoping for my success, and here's hoping for your success. Thanks so much. I'll see you next time.